Hey everyone, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm kicking off today's daily editorials with an update from Skeena Resources. Traded on the TSX under the symbol SKE and on the OTCQX under the symbol SKREF. Chad and I are chatting with the president and CEO, Walter Coles. Now, Walter, I wanted to get this interview out earlier today because the company just released some key news on the PFS, pre-feasibility study at the Eskay Creek property. Now, you have provided us a couple slides, actually a slide presentation outlining this PFS and also some of the work that's going to be done to continue to expand and grow this asset. I will post a link to that full slide deck. And I will also pull out a couple slides that we focus on here throughout this interview for easy reference. Now, the first couple slides in this slide deck really talk about the location of the Eskay Creek project, also the SNIP project that is held by Skeena Resources, both in really the heart of the Golden Triangle. And one of the slides also outlines the infrastructure that is around these assets. A lot of that is because of the historical production on these assets and really its location in the Golden Triangle around some other well-known mines. Let's start on slide six here. Now, we have the 2021 resource estimate. We already had those numbers of over 5 million ounces in measured and indicated, but now we're seeing the reserve statement, the conversion to reserves here, 3.88 million ounces gold equivalent at just short of 4.6 grams per ton. Let's start here, Walter. Take us through the conversion here into reserves to support this PFS, please.
Yeah, thanks, Corey. We're really excited to achieve this milestone, getting this PFS out, really an important step in this project evolution. I'd say, you know, as a note to all of your audience, this is a snapshot in time. We're going to continue to grow this project, but this is where we are today. So, what's so important that's come out of this PFS? The first is the conversion from resource to reserves. We had a conversion rate of about 76%. So when you move from resource to reserves, now we have a much higher confidence level in what's here and economics around it. So the reserves that are presented in the PFS, it's 3.88 million ounces of gold equivalent. The grades actually improved a little bit from the PEA. In the PEA, we were around 4.3 grams. Now we're up to 4.6 grams. So, you know, always happy to see any kind of improvement in grade. I'd highlight that with that resource estimate that we published a couple months ago, we converted most of the inferred over to measured and indicated, but there still is a little bit of inferred, and we're drilling that out right now. So we'll, you know, hopefully as we move from the PFS to the pre-feasibility, we'll add another, you know, say 175, 200,000 ounces, and the reserves will go over 4 million ounces. So great work by Paul and his team on the resource delineation and now the reserves.
All right, let's get into slide seven, because this really summarizes the numbers here of this PFS. And using the base case, U.S. gold price $15.50, silver price of $20 U.S., we're seeing an after-tax NPV of $1.4 billion Canadian, an after-tax IRR of 56%. And CapEx here looks to be U.S. dollar-wise $381 million. This looks like a cash flow generating asset right here, Walter. Take us through the PFS, the summary here on this slide, and also some of the sensitivities to the underlying gold and silver prices.
Yeah, so, you know, I'd add to your description and just point out the lowercase. At $1,400 gold, this project still has a 49% after-tax IRR. So there's margin of safety with this asset, and that's because of the grade, again, that 4.6 grams per ton. Of course, if you go the other direction, if you look at it at say, you know, $1,700 gold, the IRR jumps to 62%. The annual after-tax cash flow is $300 million a year over a 10-year mine life. So, you know, the financial metrics for this project are nothing short of awesome. In terms of differences from the PEA to the PFS, we've grown the production profile. In the PEA, it was 306,000 ounces a year. Now we're up to 350,000 ounces a year. In the PEA, the mine life was 8.7 years. Now we're up to 10-year mine life. The all-in sustainable cost came down. It was around $600 US per ounce. Now the life of mine all-in sustainable cost is down to $548 per ounce. And that's a consequence of both the improvement in grade and that we were able to achieve a higher grade concentrate. So that cut our shipping costs down, and it gave us slightly higher payable terms from the smelters. In terms of CapEx, CapEx has gone up. In the PEA, the CapEx was 230 million US, now we're 381 million. So a meaningful jump in the CapEx, and that is the, you know, the biggest driver of the increase in CapEx was additions to the mill circuits to enable us to target a higher grade concentrate. And also the improvements in the mill flow sheet have enabled us to remove more of the deleterious elements, which has significantly reduced the amount of penalties we pay to the smelters. So great work by everyone on our engineering team led by Shane Williams on this PFS. It's just it's a great result, but I would add, you know, we're pleased with it, but not satisfied, because we think there's going to be further improvement between the PFS and the feasibility study, which we're targeting to have out in about 6 months. You'll see another jump in the production profile with the feasibility study.
Well, Walt, just as it is, it's already quite impressive. And when I look at the production profile, what you expect, just 450,000 in the first 5 years and a life of mine of about 352, even if that continues to ramp up, it's already a fairly world-class project at this point. And I may actually just jump ahead to one slide, which is slide 12 on there, and that's how this production profile would stack up to other similar mines in the area. Could you review just where it is now and how it would stack up to other mines in the area?
On this slide, we took other open pit, we ranked other open pit mines in Canada. The number one largest project open pit gold mine in Canada is Canadian Malartic, which is half owned by Agnico and Yamana. Last year, in 2020, it produced 578,000 ounces of gold. Detour Lake, number two, which is owned by Kirkland, that produced 517,000 ounces. And here we are. Eskay, if it were in production today, as defined by the PFS, it would be producing 350,000 ounces. So that would make Eskay Creek the third largest gold mine in Canada. But as I mentioned, we're not going to rest on our laurels. You know, the whole team is pushing hard to keep growing this project while at the same time get it into production as quickly as we can. So, you know, everyone's excited. I mean, we all think that, you know, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to work on a project that's as stupendous, you know, incredible as Eskay. So we're not going to rest. I tell everybody this is not a marathon. It's a full-on sprint. So, you know, we're focused in trying to keep growing Eskay and make it bigger.
All right, Walt, I want you to expand on this aspect because you've touched on it a number of times. Yes, this is a snapshot in history. And now you can also still focus on some of the growth potential. Slide 11 outlines some of the near mine upside potential. Let's start here at Eskay then, in terms of what's possible growth just within Eskay Creek.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of different avenues for growth. I mean, the first most obvious one is just continued exploration, you know, close to the existing deposit. So we've got 35,000 meters of surface targeted exploration. By that, I mean, we're targeting other opportunities like the 22 zone, other sort of satellite deposits very close by that could be added into the mine plan. You know, maybe these little satellite deposits have 300 or 500,000 ounces, but that's what we're going after initially. Secondarily, we haven't even touched the underground potential. This is a VMS deposit. They come in stacked sequences. We haven't had time to go target those lower mudstone layers. So I'm very confident this mine will end up having an underground component to it as well. So that's the second opportunity. Third opportunity is Albino Lake. We drilled seven holes there this past winter. They all came back, you know, averaging about 6 grams. There's no strip ratio on that. We don't know how much is there yet. We're going to have a barge on Albino Lake in August, September. So we'll put another 25 holes in there. And so, you know, I fully expect Albino Lake to contribute ounces to this project. Fourth opportunity is going to be SNIP. So Hochschild has an option on SNIP. They have until the middle of October to decide what they do. So I don't know how that's going to play out, but either, you know, we get carried and we're a joint venture partner there, or we keep it 100% and material we get trucked over from SNIP. So the way I, you know, look at this is that we've got a mine right now that in the first 5 years is going to generate 450,000 ounces a year. And when we move to the feasibility study, that first 5 year production profile will jump to 500,000 ounces a year. And you could see this on slide 8 in our presentation. You can see that we've got very strong production profile in the first 5 years. Then in the second half, we're lower. We're down around, you know, call it 300,000 ounces a year. So what we're looking to do with this exploration and these opportunities I just described is backfill the mine plan. And between all those opportunities, I'm you know, feel pretty enthusiastic that we're going to achieve the goal that we're targeting, which is a mine that produces 500,000 ounces a year for 10 years.
Well, Walt, just on this same topic of growth, but just before we move on, you had mentioned in a previous webinar we did that you have 5.5 million ounces of gold, but you're pushing the geological team to really even push it harder and find up to 7 million ounces of gold. And some of that would come from some of those satellite pits. So maybe just dig in one more second on that and just how significant that would be if you do find these satellite pits around the primary operation, if SNIP comes into it or Albino Lake. Standalone, they may not be enough to move the needle, but if they're contributing to the and being blended with the other ore, they could really be a big economic upside for the feasibility study when that comes down the pipe.
Exactly. I mean, as you say, we have a resource of 5.6 million ounces. The conversion rate was about 75%. So, you know, we're already at 4 million ounces of reserves, pretty close to it anyway. So how do we get to 5 million ounces? How do we get to 5.5 million ounces of reserves? Right? So that means we got to grow the resource from 5.6 towards 7 million ounces, which would give us that, assuming a 75% conversion ratio, would give, you know, end us up around 5+ million ounces of reserves. So if I look at Albino Lake, you know, that's where all the waste rock went historically when they had 15-30 gram cutoffs. And there's probably, you know, somewhere between 200,000 and 300,000 ounces there. If I look at SNIP, you know, it's 600,000 ounces right now. You know, probably grow a little bit. Let's say we only end up with 40% of that if Hochschild exercises. We're carried on all the capex, and 40% of, you know, 600,000 or 700,000 ounces. Yeah, that's pushing like 250,000 ounces of potential reserves, maybe. So, you know, between Albino and SNIP, that's potentially 500,000 ounces right there of reserves. So now I only got, you know, let's say I need another 700,000 ounces of reserves. So we go, you know, I'm counting on Paul to, you know, get out there with the drill rigs and find some more ounces. And I think the odds are good that he'll succeed because we haven't really done exploration on this property. You know, last year we did 90,000 meters of drilling. It was, you know, 95% of it was infill drilling. So, you know, I think that given the very high cutoff grades historically, you know, they ignored opportunities on this property. And we're going to go and target those, you know, legacy drill holes that, you know, maybe it hit 10 grams over 20 meters and it wasn't followed up on. Well, now we're going to be following up on those things. So everyone will have to just wait and see. But Paul's done such a great job. When I talk about Paul, I mean Paul Geddes, our VP of Exploration. I don't think he'll let us down.
Hey, we've had Paul on the show a number of times. I really respect what Paul has to say on this project and what you guys have done as a team. Now, we've talked a lot about the growth potential still, but you also said that the other plans here move this into and towards production. Slide 14 has a general timeline here where we can see just at the start of this year how much work has been done and ongoing right now, infill, exploration, drilling, and then early on next year, a lot of work's going to be done What's that process to continue to advance this then towards some sort of production decision as well?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, we haven't here that the board will make a production decision, but we already know this is going to be a mine again. We show here, when you look out to next year, the feasibility study coming out in the first quarter and project financing likely to be done towards the end of the first quarter or the beginning of the second quarter. We don't list in here when we're going to start construction, and that's because it's been an ongoing, very constructive, positive conversation with the province and the Tahltan on that timeline. And I expect that we will have what the government is calling a permitting charter or project charter. No, they're calling it permitting charter out in the next, you know, month or two. And that will lay out a schedule that will be signed off on by the government, the Tahltan, and Skeena. You know, when do we start construction? When do we have all each of the various permits that we need? And when will we be in production? But I could tell you high level that all three parties are working towards a goal of seeing this project producing gold in 2024. So we're working to sort of fill in all the details to achieve that goal. And again, my hope is we'll have that schedule, that document public here in the next month or two.
Well, Walt, one other thing to note that I think is important, especially in the ESG environment that everyone is focused on slide 13, you highlight how Eskay Creek is going to be projected to be one of the lowest emission open pit gold mines worldwide. Maybe speak to that for a minute, because that is an important factor to consider when new mines come online.
Yeah, you're so right. In this day and age, more of the institutional investors are focusing on this. You know, we're quite proud of the opportunity to create a mine that would have potentially some of the lowest greenhouse gas emissions of any mine in the world. And there's a couple reasons for that. The first is that we've gotten incredibly lucky in that there are three new hydroelectric facilities, you know, within 20 kilometers of Eskay Creek that were built at a cost of about $2 billion U.S. So when Eskay and SNIP operated back in the 90s, they were powered by diesel and propane. And those hydro facilities didn't exist back then. They were built in the last, you know, 7-8 years. So we will not be powering our mines on diesel propane. Instead, it will be cheap, clean hydroelectric power. Second really important factor for reducing greenhouse gas emissions is grade of your deposit. If you have a high-grade deposit, the consequence is, you know, for X amount of tons that you're moving, you're just moving a lot more gold, and so thus also producing a lot less greenhouse gases. Right now in the PFS, the mine plan has diesel trucks and diesel shovels. We're going to look to try to change that for the feasibility study and switch over to an electric mine fleet. I don't know for sure that we'll achieve that, but that's our goal. And if we do that, we'll drive these greenhouse gas emissions even lower than, you know, how they stack up right now, which is already looks great. And I think it's something that Tahltan, the province, and Skeena will all be proud to, you know, build a mine that is not going to be contributing to greenhouse gas emissions as they have done in the past.
All right. Walt, really appreciate this update. Lot to take in here, but I do want you to just summarize for everybody, now that this PFS is out, what do investors need to be paying attention to as the company progresses through this year into next year in terms of key catalysts and key drivers to move both projects forward?
Yeah, I would say there are four attributes to this project that make Eskay an exceptionally rare asset. The first is going to be scale. Eskay already has size. It's already going to be the third biggest mine, gold mine in Canada. Second thing is the grade. Like, there's no other open pit mines that I know of in the world held by a non-major mining company that have an open pit deposit with a grade of 4.6 grams per ton. So it's got scale, it's got impressive grade. The third thing is it's in a politically stable jurisdiction. You know, unlike countries in Africa or South America that constantly, you know, tear up their mining code and change their tax rates or have a coup, we're in a politically stable jurisdiction, which means this project should trade at a premium to any other comparable projects that are in those other you know, continents that I just mentioned. And the fourth and maybe the most important aspect is this project has strong support of the local communities, the Tahltan First Nation. So I put all those things together and go, there's nothing else like this in the world today.
Hey, well, very exciting. Thanks for taking time so early on after this news came out to share with all of our audience the updates here. Again, I'll post a link to that full slide deck, but also some of the slides that we really focused on here. Those will be posted for easy reference for everybody. If anybody has any follow-up questions for Walter Coles regarding anything going on at Skeena Resources, please email us either fleck@kereport.com or shad@kereport.com. Walter, thanks again for your time. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, guys.